that's done. And then I think we're done with our morning count. No, did we refer? We have one emergency item left from this morning, but did I refer that back to Commissioner Fisher's office?
You did. Yes, you did.
Already did? Okay, so that's referred back. So then we are indeed done with the morning calendar, and we can move to 1086.
Do you want them both read together? Yes, read them both?
Yes, please.
Okay, 1086. Consider the proposal of Robert Cushman for William Allen LLC et al. And the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval to change the comprehensive plan map designation from attached residential to medium density multi-dwelling and the zoning map designation from R2.5 to R1 for property located at 3322 Southeast Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard, LU13173075CPZC, and 1087, amend the comprehensive plan map designation and change zoning of property at 3322 Southeast Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard at the request of Robert Cushman for William Allen LLC, lead applicant, and owned by Jeffrey Evershed, LU13173075CPZC.
Okay, Commissioner Fritz, would you like to introduce this? And we'll call on the city attorney to give us our instructions. Not necessarily. Okay, so this is a quasi-judicial land use hearing. Our city attorney has some instructions and some timelines to describe.
Good afternoon. I have several announcements to make concerning the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and some guidelines for presenting testimony. The matter before the City Council today is a report and recommendation from the hearings officer on a proposed comprehensive plan map amendment and zoning map amendment. This is an evidentiary hearing, which means that you may submit new evidence to the City Council in support of your arguments. Testimony concerning the hearings officer's recommendation will be heard as follows. We'll begin with a staff report by BDS for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and will have 10 minutes to address the Council. After the applicant, the Council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal, and each person will have 3 minutes to speak. Next, the Council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal, and again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, if there was testimony in opposition to the applicant's proposal, the applicant will have 5 additional minutes to rebut testimony given in opposition. The Council may then close the hearing and deliberate. The Council may vote today on the hearings officer's recommendation, or if the vote is a tentative vote, the Council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the hearings officer's recommendation. If the Council takes a final vote on the findings and recommendation today, that will conclude the matter before the Council, except for the ordinance implementing the decision, which is non-emergency and needs to be continued forward. In terms of guidelines for those addressing the City Council today, any letters or documents that you want to become part of the record should be given to the Council Clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to the Council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the Council Clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or any other criteria in the City's comprehensive plan or zoning code that you believe applies to the decision. The BDS staff will identify at the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to the Council. You must raise an issue clearly enough to give the Council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you'll be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. And finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the Council to respond, the applicant may be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. That concludes my opening remarks.
Okay, thank you. Do any members of the Council have any ex parte contacts or potential conflicts of interest to declare? Okay, hearing none, then we'll move to a staff report. Kathleen, please.
Thank you. I'm Kathleen Stokes, BDS, Land Bureau of Development Services, and I am presenting the recommendation of the hearings officer on this case. This is a proposal for a change in the comprehensive plan map designation for a 19,575-square-foot property from single-dwelling attached residential to medium-density multi-dwelling residential, and a concurrent zoning map amendment from R2.5 to R1. Redevelopment of the site at the R1 density would allow a maximum of 19 units and require a minimum of 14 units. In order to be approved, this proposal must comply with the relevant approval criteria of Title 33, the Portland Zoning Code. These criteria are for the Comprehensive Plan Map Amendment found in Code Section 33.810.050 and for the Zoning Map Amendment in Code Section 33.855.050. This view is showing you a comparison of the zoning maps. You'll see that they look fairly similar. It's taking the R2.5 designation in the existing zoning map on the left and in changing it to R1 as shown on the right. Basically now it's grouping with R2.5 that is to the north and across the street to the west, and it would be grouping with an R1 parcel that's immediately abutting to the south and then across the street to the southwest. I've got a few views that I'm going to share with you to get a sense of the configurations of this property. It's a very long compared to narrow parcel. It's about 75 feet wide and 261 feet deep. And this aerial view shows you how it fits in abutting single dwelling and some duplexes, but single dwelling zoning to the north. And then some non-conforming apartments in the single dwelling zone are abutting part of its southern property line. A single-dwelling residence in an R1 zone abutting the rest of the southern property line, and then below that, further south to Powell, there's a commercial zone with commercial development. I've got a couple of other views here showing bird's-eye views. In this one, west is at the top of the view, which is Cesar Chavez Boulevard, and Franklin is to the north on the right-hand side of the screen. The commercial development that abuts Powell is on the left-hand side of the screen. And so the back end of the house that you can see, the white house with the large green yard behind it, is the subject site. And here's another view of it, this time with north at the top of the screen and looking at the property as it fits in between the as I said, non-conforming apartment complex that's immediately abutting to the south, and then the single-dwelling residences that are to the north.
And just before you leave that, so all the frontage, street, and parking lot area that you see for that adjacent set of non-conforming apartments, that's all just driveway, right? That's not dedicated street.
That is a driveway, yes. Yeah. There's no street there.
Yeah, it's all private driveway, not public street.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
So currently the property is developed only with this 1907 single-dwelling residence. This view is showing the western bank of the property with the abutting duplex that fronts onto Franklin, peeking over the top of the bank, and it gives you a sense of the proximity of the property to the abutting residential zone to the north. Here we're looking at a view to the west across Cesar Chavez from the site, showing an older courtyard apartment in the R1 zone. Allowing an increase in density in this area would be in keeping with the street classifications here, because the street is designated as a major city traffic street, transit access street, local service bikeway, city walkway, truck access street, major emergency response street, and also a regional trafficway for design. The uses and development in the area include a mix of commercial and residential, with a stronger commercial core at Southeast Powell. This view shows an older building that appears to have been a multi-dwelling structure that was converted to commercial use. On the side street along Southeast Franklin, the development pattern is very different. The first three lots to the east from the intersection on the south side of the street all share a common property line with the applicant's site. These properties contain high-quality, well-maintained duplexes from the early 1960s, and the structure that you're looking at here is on the southeast corner of Chavez and Franklin. Next couple slides move to the east along that street. This is the second lot to the east with another duplex, and the third lot in with yet another duplex. Beyond that, the street consists of vintage and well-kept single-dwelling residences. Uses and development to the west, as seen here, and to the south, as you'll see in some later slides, consist of the commercial character of the area. The higher density that is requested in this designation would fit well in proximity to these commercial sites to support their uses and services. This view is looking north along Cesar Chavez from a point that is on the same block as the site, but a little bit to the south and closer to the intersection with Powell. The service station is at the end of the block on the northeast corner of Chavez and Powell Boulevards. Here's a view at the intersection of Chavez and Powell looking to the west from the southeast corner in front of the Safeway store that's located on that intersection. And here a view to the north on Chavez from that same vantage point, so looking back toward the site from the south side of Powell Boulevard. This is a view of Powell Boulevard, Highway 26, looking to the east and northeast. The transportation infrastructure of Powell Boulevard and Cesar Chavez do offer many multimodal opportunities that would fit well with the proposed increase in density. Now we're back to Southeast Franklin Street. The next views show more of the development that abuts the site in the single-dwelling zone on this street. And now this is a view of the residential street looking to the west, and with the West Hills in the distance. The redevelopment of the site to the R1 density can support numerous policies of the city's comprehensive plan. The requested amendments can meet the relevant approval criteria. The increased density would allow it to be in keeping with the city's overall policies to place higher density development near major arterials and adjacent to commercial areas. The resulting transition from commercial to lower residential densities promotes more efficient use of multimodal transportation facilities in the area, and it also offers more variety in housing opportunities. The hearings officer's recommendation was approval as proposed with no conditions. Thank you.
Okay. Questions for Kathleen?
I thought there were some conditions that the hearings officer concluded he didn't have the authority to impose. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, Commissioner Saltzman, that's not correct.
That's not correct. Okay.
There were some conditions that were included in my initial recommendation to the hearings officer. Mm-hmm. The applicant asked for those to be removed, and the hearings officer agreed to do so.
Okay. Thanks.
Could you tell us what those conditions were?
There were three of them. I recommended that because of the configuration of the property being so narrow and long and, you know, kind of tightly fitted in next to the single dwelling zone, that any future redevelopment of the site be subject to design review to determine that the site design would be appropriate to fit in next to the single dwelling properties without undue hardship on those properties. Also that for the same reasons that the height of the development be limited to 65 feet, which is the height limit that currently exists for the R2 designations that are on the property, and would also be the height that the adjacent properties would be subject to if they were to take advantage of their R2.5 comprehensive plan designation. And finally, in response to some letters from some of the neighbors, I crafted a condition that asked for a modified version or something that would be modeled on the demolition delay procedure that's in the zoning code, recognizing the fact that this house on the site does not have any recognized historic value. It would not be subject to documenting historic resources and contacting the State Historic Preservation Office, but to offer the house up for moving, if anyone were to want to do that, or if no one came forward wanting to move the house, that it then be deconstructed and the materials be recycled.
Let me ask the city attorney, do you think that the council has the authority under the current code and regulations to impose those conditions?
As to demolition delay, I don't see anything explicit in the zoning code other than demolition delay being provided, being required for, required and provided for demolition of certain types of historic structures. There is independently authority in other titles of the city code, notably Title 24 does provide for certain kinds of demo delay. And so that might be something that would apply independently of the zoning code. In terms of design review, yes, I believe the council has the authority in Title 33 to impose that type of condition. If the council finds that imposing that type of condition is necessary to ensure that this proposal complies with the relevant approval criteria, in terms of maximum height, I think my answer would be the same. It would, in order to impose design review and height limitations, you would need to tie those or relate those to compliance with specific approval criteria.
Thank you. And actually, I'm now remembering that since Ms. Stokes put in her recommendation, we have at the Development Services taken a new view of what Title 24 says regarding demolition delay. So I believe that since this would be going from one house, one single family, to something other than a single family, that there would be demolition delay by right under the current reading of the Title 24. So I just wanted to air that out for my colleagues, because the height issue and the design issue, I think, are two that I'm concerned about. Excuse me.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for that clarification.
Just Kathleen, did you say that the maximum height you recommended was 65 feet?
No, I recommended that it be limited to 35 feet. The R1 zone would allow a 45-foot structure to be built on the property.
And isn't the proposal to do a two-story structure? So why would they be against a 35-foot?
We don't have a development proposal.
Ah, okay. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay. Other questions for Kathleen or staff? Right. Thank you very much. So now we'll hear from the applicant. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, commissioners. For the record, my name is Mike Connors with the law firm Hathaway Kobach Connors. Should I give my address?
No need.
Okay. With me here on my left is Ben Gates from Redside, who's the developer for this project. And I think the staff report was very good, thorough, gave you an understanding of what the proposal is, some context for the surrounding area, some of the key issues. And you also have the hearings officer's decision, which, as you can see, is very thorough, addressing each of the criteria, talking about the rationale. And given a limitation of 10 minutes, it's not my intent to go through a detailed discussion of all the approval criteria. But what I am going to try to do is just sort of summarize what we believe to be the justification and the reason that you should approve this proposal. And then Mr. Gates is going to talk a little bit about the experience and principles of this developer and the vision for this particular property. So sort of summarizing, the key underlying approval criteria is whether or not the proposal is equally or more supportive of the goals and policies. And it's our belief that it in this case is more supportive of the applicable goals and policies, mm-hmm. and I believe both the staff report and the hearings officer's decision support that conclusion. And sort of some of the key items that you should focus on that support that conclusion are, first of all, that it is consistent with the city's overall policy for encouraging higher density residential in appropriate locations and providing for a wider range of types of housing. And we believe with the medium density multifamily designation and zoning that it will be consistent, more consistent with those particular policies. And those particular policies are particularly important when you have property that is in close proximity to these multimodal transportation systems. And as you know, Cesar Chavez and Powell Boulevard are major thoroughfares, as staff indicated, transit supportive, bike supportive, can accommodate the car traffic. And so that is even more justification for putting these kind of uses here. Also, if you look at some of the commercial zones and uses that are in very close proximity, the whole philosophy of putting higher density residential in areas where people not only have access to transit but can walk to the Safeway that's right on the corner of Powell and Cesar Chavez and walk to the various shops, that we believe is more consistent with the overall goals and policies of the city. We also believe that it is more consistent with the zoning and land use pattern for the surrounding area. As you saw during the staff report, you've got properties to the south, immediately to the south, one of them zoned R1 already, and then even the R2.5, R5 property that is to the east, south end of our property, has currently multifamily apartments on them. Further south of that is where you get into all the commercial area, and so not only is it kind of consistent with that R1 zoning that currently is there, but it'll provide a buffer from the commercial zoning and commercial uses that are on the south end of the property. To the west, you also have an R1 zone property. You have multifamily dwelling units that are currently developed there. And then to the north and the east, you have R2.5 zoning, but you also have a number of duplexes that are immediately to the north of our property. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at sort of the surrounding area, the zoning, the uses, and then consider it within the context of its proximity to this major intersection, Powell and Cesar Chavez, we think that the proposal to change the zone to a medium density multifamily is more appropriate, more consistent with this area. And one thing that was striking to me in the hearings officer's decision is, although it's an increase in density, as he talked about it, it's an incremental increase. So here we're going from a single-family dwelling, but it's the most highest density single-family dwelling zone, to a medium density multifamily. So clearly there's going to be an increase in density, but we're not going from one extreme to another. And so we think that it does support that transition. And I think that's part of the reason why you have some R1 zone properties in that immediate area and already some multifamily uses. I think both the staff report and the hearings officer go through each one of the criteria. You've got both staff and your hearings officer recommendation demonstrating, really showing that we comply with all the criteria, explaining why this proposal is consistent with the criteria and is more consistent with the applicable goals and policies. And for that reason, we ask that you adopt the hearings officer's recommendation. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Gates, and he can talk a little bit about the developer, and then we can open it up to any questions that you might have.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Welcome. Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor Hales. It's good to be here today. My name is Ben Gates. I've worked with some of you before in my former job at Central City Concern, so it's good to be here today to talk a little bit about this project and who RedSide is. RedSide's a local development company that believes in responsible development. We've been around for about 14 years, and we believe in a triple bottom line approach to development. And with all of our projects, we're looking to be guided by values that maximize our beneficial impact, to be respectful, and also to produce only quality work. So what that leads us to do is to build projects, redevelop projects, and own the projects for the long term. And so with our long-term outlook, we're not only developing, but we're operating these projects for the foreseeable future. That kind of feedback loop informs what we do on the front end. And on the front end, we want to make sure that this is a responsible project going forward. This project we're particularly excited about because I think it fits within some real need in this inner city part of Cesar Chavez and Powell's to bring density close to where amenities are and to bring multifamily development opportunities and housing opportunities around places that are served by multimodal transit. We've voluntarily met with the Neighborhood Association on three different occasions and have spoken with them about our plans for the project and understand some real concerns of the neighbors around privacy and access to light and other issues that can be impacted by multifamily development. So going forward, as we proceed on this schematic design of the building, we've interviewed three really excellent local architecture firms with some of these principles and ideas and goals in mind and are looking forward to proceeding with the design under the new zone in a development that is respectful and brings important housing to the city.
Okay. Questions?
Go ahead. Why did you go for R1 instead of R2?
It's currently zoned as R25, and R1 allows 19 units on the property, which was kind of an economically feasible balance of what could be done on the property to make it a viable multifamily development.
So I see in the report that you're planning to provide 18 parking spaces, but there's no condition of approval for that. And my understanding is you're not required to provide
Correct.
Any parking.
Correct.
So that's of concern, seeing the aerial photographs of Franklin Street already being parked up. The comprehensive plan talks about preserving on-street parking for the benefit of the commercial mm-hmm. areas. So where do you think your residents are going to park their cars?
So we're planning on one parking unit for every unit that we provide. So we are planning on on-site parking. And again, this kind of gets to the long-term ownership perspective. If we were turning around and selling the property, we might not be concerned about providing parking. But we want this to be a viable project for the long term. We think that providing parking is an important component to attracting residents and providing them with the proper amenities to live in that portion of Portland.
So you would accept a condition of approval requiring one parking spot per unit?
I think we would have to consider that. Again, we have kind of a whole team working on this that includes designers. And one of the important things that I think we would like to preserve is the flexibility to manipulate the design. So as we look at balancing landscape and building form and parking, we might find, for example, that it would make sense to eliminate or add a parking space.
So then why did you object to the condition requiring design review?
Design review adds time and cost and uncertainty, which all provides kind of risk and potential cost to a development. It can ultimately lead to higher costs in development. It could mean higher rents that need to be charged for units, less affordability. Under the current zoning, there are, requirements on height and building setbacks, which when matched with an excellent and capable architecture firm results in good design, in my opinion. So for that reason, we're wanting the more streamlined path and the ability to work directly with the architect on the design development of the project.
And Commissioner Fritz, if I could just add to that, in your code, in the design review section of your code, which is 33825. It talks about specific areas where the city has design overlays and specific types of development that warrant a design review. And so one of the issues that we talked about at the hearings officer hearing is that this doesn't fit in either one of those. And so we didn't want the public that was there to get the misnomer that that means that there are no standards at all. There are clearly development standards, and those standards were standards that the city adopted to make sure that development that was intended and expected in this kind of zone would be consistent with that intent. And so we just didn't believe that the design review condition was appropriate. And as Mr. Gates mentioned, we've been working with the neighbors. We've met with them 3 times. We're sensitive to their concerns. We're going to continue to work with them. And we felt that that would be sufficient. And as Ben said, concern about the time, cost, and uncertainty of going through a Type 2 process.
You're asking for something that's not by right. It's
understood.
A discretionary decision the council mm-hmm. can make. So you're asking to put a lot of density on a site that's adjacent to single-family zones. So I'm trying to figure out, is there a way to get to conditions that could ensure, yes, I know you have good intentions, I know you're going to have a good architectural firm, sometimes good intentions don't match up with what the neighborhood's expectations are, or might not be enough to make me feel confident that R1 is the appropriate zone, because what the comprehensive plan map says is it's 2.5. So that's what I'll be interested in hearing comments from the community about, is what can this recommendation be conditioned in such a way that would make me and others feel comfortable that we're going to get the right transitional development between the commercial zone to the single family zone. So you could be thinking about that for when you come back with your later statement. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, other questions for the applicant? We may have more later, but thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, and then any individuals who are signed up to speak in support of the application?
We have one more person, Doug Klotz.
Doug, come on up.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Let's see, Mayor Hales, Commissioners Novick, Fritz, and Salzman. I'm Doug Klotz, K-L-O-T-Z, 1908 Southeast 35th Place. I'm speaking for myself, although I am a board member of the Richmond Neighborhood Association. I've been following land use in the Richmond neighborhood for 20 years, and we've recently had a lot of development along Division, but not much happening on Powell or Chavez, really. So it's gratifying to see something happening, in another part of the neighborhood and near an intersection that has the transit, has potential walkability, and so this. I think that adding the 19 apartments near the Powell and Chavez intersection supports many goals of the city and the comp plan update to come, increasing housing opportunities near these two transit streets, near the Safeway and the other shops on Powell will support the 20-minute neighborhood concept to a greater extent than a lower density zone. As well, the Powell Division high capacity transit plans call for tri-capacity transit on Powell and a station at Powell and Chavez. I mean, that's alternative, but that looks like the way it's going. And the designation of Powell and Chavez as civic corridors in the proposed comp plan designation, the proposed comprehensive plan, the civic corridor designation means that there may be changes to how Chavez functions on a land use, from a land use point of view. As we heard when Marty Houston of BDS gave us a presentation on Monday night at our neighborhood association. So while Powell, it would make sense, it's a civic corridor, Chavez is designated a civic corridor as well. And there could be a change in what the character of Chavez is. So in short, I agree with the hearings officer's recommendation with, approving the zone change and comp plan change with no conditions. Take it back. I think there's a general agreement that if the developer agrees to deconstruct the house, the neighborhood, I believe, is agreeable with that. All parties that I've spoken to are agreeable with that. So the other two conditions are the the design review requirement, which, you know, I realize there's, it's nice to have design review. I'm just afraid that it's hard enough to develop small apartments under financing constraints. I've talked to developers about that, and just the design review just adds another burden to make, you know, to make it harder to get the project done. This site was already attempted to be developed, you know, in the last decade, and that didn't work out. And we're hoping that, or a lot of us, some of us anyway, are hoping that this will come to fruition, and we'll get something there better than a large vacant lot. So keeping the housing costs down would also be a result of that. And the 35 feet, as Ben mentioned, it'd be nice to have the flexibility to tamp things down on one side and shove them up on the other side, that the 45 foot would allow. I mean, I don't. It's not going to be 45 feet the whole thing, because there's not that many apartments. It's only 19 units compared to, you know, other places where you can put, where you would could maximize that 45 feet. So I think that I would think that it would be best to just leave the height limit as is in the zone. Anyway, so I urge you to just approve the change without the conditions. Thank you.
Has the Richmond Neighborhood Association had a chance to look at the proposed comprehensive plan map with the comprehensive plan update? And do you have any preliminary feelings on what the area-wide zoning of Powell and Chavez should be?
We heard in our talk Monday, we heard we actually did look at that. And the what we heard from Marty Houston was any changes to Chavez would be in the future, not with the comp plan update. Powell and the rest of the commercial zoning in the neighborhood anyway is basically staying the same. I mean, it'll be the equivalent in the new zone, in the new mixed use zones, but there's not no major changes planned for this comp plan update, although Marty talked about changes that would come in the civic corridors in the future, but it's, you know, a future plans.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. Other questions for Doug? Thanks very much. Okay, and then we have some folks signed up in opposition to the proposal. Okay.
Yes, I have 5 people signed up. The first 3, please come on up, are Megan Light, Dee Dee Remington, and Denise Hare.
Do we give the principal opponents more time? Or
well, yeah, I'm not sure if there is a principal opponent in this case. The Neighborhood Association didn't take a position, right?
They emailed it in, actually.
I'm sorry?
They did vote last night.
Oh.
They emailed it to you.
Okay. And if someone's here on behalf of the neighborhood?
Not representing the board, but I have the letter.
Okay. That's all right. Obviously. We should put that into the record, but we'll give each of you individual time. But if you need a little extra, that's fine. I don't think we have an organized principal opponent.
Commissioner Fritz, because this, what you're hearing is a recommendation from the hearings officer as opposed to appeal, typically we don't designate someone as a principal opponent. I suppose it's at the council's discretion whether you give people a little more time, as long as there is equivalent time given to the applicant as well.
Well, that was what I was thinking. The applicant got 10 minutes, so I wanted to make sure that.
All right. Well, we'll be generous, but I don't think we have a single organization in opposition, but individual residents. So, go ahead. Whoever would like to start.
I already cut mine down to 3 minutes.
So. Okay.
Can I try it on mine? Do I start? Okay. Mayor Hills and commissioners, thank you for your time today. My name is Megan Light, and although I am a Richmond Neighborhood Association board member, I am speaking on my own behalf today. I ask you to reject outright the proposed zone change. I live 10 blocks away, so it is not a matter of this being in my backyard, but rather of keeping the neighborhood developing within the guidelines of the comprehensive plan. As a landlord, I do understand that property owners want to maximize their investments, but current zoning is more than adequate to meet Portland's projected growth. This particular lot was already changed from R5 to 2.5 a few years ago, and there's no plan to change it with the new comp plan draft. Following are a few examples from the hearings officer's report that I feel are poor interpretations of the zoning code approval criteria. In general, they give preference to increased density language, but completely ignore the language pertaining to preserving neighborhood character and livability. For example, Goal 3 under neighborhoods, preserve and reinforce the stability and diversity of residential areas in order to attract and retain long-term residents. The findings that the record does not contain evidence that buildings 45 feet in the 45-foot range will necessarily adversely affect the stability and diversity to me is a stretch. A lack of evidence that it may do no harm is not a guarantee that it won't. And currently, there are about 20 households surrounding this property that would be overshadowed by a four-story building. Goal 3 under neighborhood plan. Oh, actually, I sent in a letter that I previously submitted to the BDS, and you should have a copy of that. I emailed it yesterday. I won't repeat all that. In addition, though, Objective 4.5 states protect residential areas from commercial encroachment. The hearings officer finds that R1 zoning and multifamily housing would actually provide visual and sound buffering for adjacent single-family residences. Personally, well, I think that most people would agree that a commercial building, which is 150 feet away, which is the current scenario, with 2 or 3 story houses and apartments in between, is a far better situation than having a 45-foot building looming over your house at 10 with a 10-foot setback, and where neighbors can look into the backyard and all of the sense of privacy is lost. And finally, under Goal 12, Urban Design, and I'm paraphrasing here because it's a long goal, it describes enhancing Portland as a livable city, preserving its history, preserve and support the qualities of individual neighborhoods that make them attractive places, encourage neighborhoods to express their design values, respect and strengthen neighborhood values. Seemingly unrelated, the findings state that the site is immediately adjacent to a busy regional commercial node and further state that it's sandwiched between commercial and single-dwelling residential area. These statements are inaccurate, they are misleading, and I believe they're irrelevant to the goal. The particular property has single-family and smallplexes on one side and 2-story apartments on the other. Contrary to the hearings officer report, I don't see anything under Goal 12 that supports a zone change for this particular lot. In summary, I think there's enough questionable findings that it would make sense to leave the property as it is and welcome the 7 or 8 single-family homes or attached homes rather than make a mistake that impacts many neighbors in a much greater negative way. The RNA voted, can I have just another 10 seconds?
Okay. Yes.
The RNA voted to support the zone change with the planner's conditions. Of course, conditions are better than unencumbered R1, but we should not have to choose the lesser of two evils because the developer is asking to erode the edges of our neighborhoods and we are afraid of the potential outcome. We don't need this lot changed. We have enough. Please reject this proposal outright and the developer can proceed with the current R25 zoning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks. Questions?
Amazing testimony, very much on the approval criteria. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks. Who'd like to be next? Go ahead.
I guess it's going to be me. Hi, Mayor Hills and Commissioners. My name is Dee Dee Remington. I co-own and reside at 3956 Southeast Franklin Street. My property abuts the property that we're talking about at 3322 Southeast Cesar Chavez Boulevard or 39th Avenue. I'm here today to ask the City of Portland Council to oppose the rezoning and the amendment of the 2035 Comprehensive Plan map. My reasons for this request may seem like they're entirely personal. Here, not in my backyard, but this is coming into my backyard pretty much. But what disturbs me is I'm concerned about the City of Portland and primarily this comprehensive plan. Marty Stockton from the City of Portland did do a presentation at the Richmond neighborhood meeting on Monday. I've read the proposal plan, and it's disturbing to me that there's high density is just kind of how we're going to handle this growth that's supposed to be coming. And that 39th is also viewed as kind of prime for this in some ways. In the current configuration, Southeast Franklin Street, my street, and the corner, as Kathleen Stokes pointed out with her slides, is kind of primed for the developers to come in and continue with high-density growth. On my side of Southeast Franklin Street, there's the duplexes and the triplex. My property and the neighbors next to me all sit on fairly large lots. If rezoning is available for any developer who have money and time and effort to come and go through the process to get these houses, get these properties, we're going to be destroying the look of a charming old residential area, a charming old residential street, and in its current configuration, it represents to me what is unique about Portland and why I love living in the city and why I love living on that street, which I have lived in since 1995. I've lived in Portland since 1974, and I've paid my taxes, I've tried to be a contributing member of the community, and I just feel this plan and rezoning, as it's proposed, is an effort to kind of just ignore people like me and my husband and other neighbors and just say, hey, it's an old house, it's a commercial, old rundown commercial area, let's just rip it down and pack as many people as we can in. This proposed rezoning often offers challenges to the neighborhood as well. At Southeast 39th and Franklin Street, there's illegal left turns constantly. The Traffic Division of Portland says they've done reports and they've done studies, but I've been out, I live on the street. They come at 10 o'clock in the morning. They need to come at rush hour. They need to see the backup. They need to see how many illegal left turns happen daily there, and the speeding, and the safety issues that happen.
So it's not legal to turn left onto...
It's not legal to turn left off of 39th onto Franklin on either way, and yet it happens like it's their given right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm almost done here. The developers, we heard mention that they want to be responsible and respectful, yet it had to be brought to their attention. They did a proposal, kind of a quick little drawing of how they want to design the building to get their process going and to get the paperwork started. And yet there was no indication of regards for safety, for security, for lighting, for anything like that in their proposal. It was just, here's our apartment plan, we're going to go for it. If they're looking at being so respectful, looking at being so responsible, why did it have to be brought to their attention that they've missed some major gaps here? And now it's like, okay, we'll be responsible, we'll be respectful. If I wanted to live in a city that, with the high density, that things were packed in and people were packed on top of everybody, I'd move to New York or LA. But I want to live in Portland. And I think we're at risk of ruining what is really amazing about this city and stripping of it its charm and just packing as many people as we can in. I'm asking this again, the city council to oppose this rezoning change and amendment to the comprehensive plan. If not, if you can't see your way to do that, please consider the conditions that Kathleen Stokes recommended in her report that the hearings officer rejected, and there are two additional in the letter that the Richmond Neighborhood Association recommended as well. Please consider those as well as conditions for this. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
That's a very helpful testimony. So if you're heading south on Chavez, you're not allowed to make a left turn onto Franklin to get to your home, so presumably you turn right onto Kelly and then onto 38.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to want to hear from transportation. How are people who are heading south on Chavez going to get to this apartment mm-hmm. building? Because you can't get there.
And at rush hour, it's backed up from Hawthorne to Powell. The line is just stopped.
And 38th doesn't go through to Powell.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
So that's something that I'll want to hear. Thank you
and,
very much.
And it's
helpful.
Something you do living in the neighborhood, you know, and... Well, I've done it for almost 20 years, and I don't mind.
It's physically possible for you to do that with their development being mid-block.
Right.
It's not possible.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Denise Hare. I'm a member of the Richmond Neighborhood Association, but I'm here today representing my own views. I live well removed from the site in question, so will not be directly affected by your decision. However, I've recently experienced the intrusions of a new 45-foot apartment building that overlooks my backyard. I deeply sympathize with the residents of Franklin Street who face a possible similar fate. The question for me revolves around whether the proposed change to R1 zoning is equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan as a whole than the existing R25 designation. The answer is no. Much has been made of the gains in housing quantity and density that the developers' plans may offer, but what is overlooked are the ways in which it will reduce realization of other goals. Others speaking today note many of these. I myself would like to focus on the comprehensive plan's goals of improving and protecting the city's residential neighborhoods. Given the very narrow configuration of the lot in question, it is impossible for high-density multifamily housing to be built without severely impacting privacy on the north and south sides, both of which are residentially zoned. For the north side residents, this is a particularly big hit as they've bought and made investments in their homes predicated on the assumption of single-family zoning for themselves and for the adjacent property. To suddenly switch this designation further exacerbates the problem laid out in the State of the City Design Report 2014 from the Portland Design Commission, where it is noted that homeowners in split-zone blocks must bear the costs of adjacent high-density building, though they are unable to reap the financial gains from similar redevelopment of their own property. I know from experience how this story plays out. In my case, I faced directly 12 fourth-floor and 15 third-floor apartment windows as soon as I step out my back door. My entire patio is exposed, and there are few places I can go in my backyard where I cannot see the windows and where building residents cannot see me. In fact, I've been stopped on the street by strangers who tell me that they've seen me and my daughter out in the backyard or coming and going. An overture I know is meant to be friendly, but it feels creepy too. It is not only that we are being watched, but we also see and hear more than we wish. Conversations and arguments can be heard. At night, the windows cast a glow that we cannot block out, flooding our yard with light. I would like to plant a row of trees to help obstruct the view of the new apartment building. However, there's another lot between the new building and me. That owner is considering selling, and circumstances suggest that a developer will purchase her property. The kind of construction we see today, with digging and building to the property line, discourages me from investing in trees along that side of my property, because I've seen how root damage can necessitate removal of these buffers. Given all that's going on with tearing down a new building, I expect my property ultimately will fall into a developer's hands as well. This makes me rethink a planned kitchen remodel, though I do hope to stay in my home till my daughter finishes high school. In short, the density-driven development that I'm surrounded by is causing me to disinvest in my own property. And it's not just me. When neighbors on my block meet, the topic of discussion immediately turns to who's thinking about selling and how much longer we expect to stay in our homes. We are not only financially disinvesting, but the social capital we have built over the years is dissipating as we face a future of departures and demolitions. It is this degradation of housing and neighborhoods to which I call your attention. Perhaps you may think it is the inevitable cost of moving forward, but I disagree. The neighborhoods of our community have long been held up as one of our greatest assets. When homeowners lose long-term interest in their properties, communities falter. What will happen in the next recession when construction once again grinds to a halt? Will we be served well by having more short-sighted homeownership? I don't believe we will. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you all. Appreciate it. Next group, please.
The next two are Neil Carpenter and Gordon Brown.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. My name is Neil Carpenter, and I'm a neighbour on Franklin Street, on the north side of the street. So I have a letter for the council, which I'll read. Dear City Council, my wife, Robin Painter, and I have concerns about the proposed zoning change at 3322 Southeast Caesar E. Chavez Boulevard. The 19,000 square foot lot allows for 7 family dwellings and additional units that we feel is to be the maximum amount of infill the site can be developed to without negative consequences. These would likely have gabled roof lines that are in keeping with the residential family homes already on Franklin Street and have modest impact on surrounding neighbours. A zone change to R1 would allow a 4-storey building of 45-foot height. A height of 45-foot and a square-sided building will cause significant loss of sunlight for my neighbours on the south side of Franklin Street. A key aspect of the site is the 291-foot depth, not 261, as Kathleen mentioned. I'm sure you're all aware of the development at Southeast 37th and Southeast Division Street. That's the 81-unit block without parking. That monolith apartment building is on a plot 200 foot deep and digs deep into the neighbourhood along Southeast 37th. It is very overpowering. Buildings along corridors usually go back 100 feet. The Chavez site does not go back 100 feet or even 200 feet. It goes back nearly 300 feet. This is a huge increase and will dig deep into the neighborhood along Franklin Street, abutting four separate properties and being visible and affecting a significant length of that block on Franklin Street. Therefore, I oppose the zoning change to R1 or to any change that allows a height of 45 foot. Thank you for your considerations.
Thank you. Next, please.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. Privilege and pleasure to be here today. I'm Gordon Brown. I represent West Coast Bank. We are the trustee for property on 3922 Southeast Franklin. So it's adjacent on the north property line. My thoughts are I support development. I support progressing and higher density. My thoughts are the existing 2.5 height restriction of 35 feet, I think, is adequate. My concern at 45 feet, some of you may know in Southeast Portland, the Black Cat Tavern. Well, the Black Cat Tavern was condemned, and here is a picture of what it has done to a vintage Portland home. And people go by there and say, my, there should be some egresses for light. Or what about lights? How did this get through? I'll leave these pictures for the court of the Black Cat Tavern apartments and what it can do. But the it's not consistent with the livability of the neighborhood. They're vintage homes. There's duplexes along Franklin in early 40s, which there's a dearth of parking anyway. So I guess my thought, too, of you know, I understand high density, but walking to Safeway, I think, only happens in episodes of Portlandia. That's all I'm here to say is that I'm okay with some multifamily, but I think the existing 35 feet restriction is adequate due to sunlight blockage and just not being consistent with the livability of the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any others who signed up?
That's all who signed up.
So I've got a bunch of questions for staff. Others might as well, but are we going to give the applicant the chance to come back and rebut first? So let's do that. So we'll give you a chance to come back up and respond to any of the testimony that you heard here, and then there might be further council questions for you as well as for the staff. So come on back. So you heard the testimony in opposition. Maybe you might want to respond to any of those points, and then there may be some more council questions as well.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, again, for the record, Mike Connors here on behalf of the applicant. Try to briefly respond to some of the issues raised by the neighbors and then also hopefully have some opportunity to talk about the conditions. First of all, with respect to the neighbor comments, I appreciate concern about the uncertainty and new development in the area. I have right next to my property a house that was smooshed and a new house that towers over my house, still under construction. I've gone through that process. I have personal experience understanding that. But as this commission knows, you have to balance the need, to address impacts and concerns from neighboring properties to the need to implement and carry forward your policies. And one of those policies is the need to provide for more housing density and the need to provide for a wider range of housing. As I explained in my opening comments, and as you can see in the staff report and hearings officer, this particular location, we believe, is appropriate for this kind of higher density. We have to accommodate growth somehow. We have to put these people somewhere. And so it's going to have to go in somebody's neighborhood who's going to have these concerns. So really the question is it an appropriate area? Is it a property that satisfies that test of being equally or more supportive of carrying forward the policies and goals that the city has adopted? And we think that it is, based on the surrounding uses and zonings, the R1s right in close proximity, the commercial uses that are there. And I understand that some people may take issue with some of the policies that the city has adopted as to whether you want to accommodate higher density in these kind of areas, whether people actually do walk to and use these other forms of transportation. But those are the policies that you've adopted, and we believe that this proposal is consistent with them, and you should stand behind it. Because if it's not appropriate here, this is me speaking personally, I think it's difficult to find an area where you wouldn't be able to satisfy that test. With respect to
just before you go on,
oh, sure.
I'd like to